Nietzsche has given us a very comprehensive overview of the history leading up to the Maccabean Wars. We're dealing with the period after the death of Alexander the Great, who was very much admired by Antiochus, who wished to emulate his great feats. As you know, the books of Maccabees and the Apocrypha were not included in the canon of scripture, but they're very useful as history books, together with the works of Josephus. So, the Wars of the Maccabees. In the narrative of 1 Maccabee, after Antiochus issued decrees forbidding Jewish religious practice, a rural priest from, I don't know how you pronounce that, I've just pronounced it Modian, Mattathias the Hasmonean, sparked the revolt against the Seleucid Empire by refusing to worship the Greek gods. This was in the period 167 to 160. Now, in the history books, they say BCE, before the Common Era, but I'm going to say BC, before Christ, because that's what I believe. So I'll be using BC. Okay, Robin, where's the... Oh, this... What do I hit? The door. I couldn't see it. That's all right. As long as... No, that's all right. So the Jewish revolt against the Greeks set a precedent as the world's first religious war. 1 Maccabees was originally written in Hebrew as an official court history for the Hasmonean dynasty. So now we're going to talk about the rebellion. Although many of the Jewish community were at this point Hellenized, the persecution of the Jewish people and the distraction of practicing Judaism united the Jewish people in Judea. They needed someone to lead them. Antiochus sent his officers to Modin, where they met Mattathias. He was ordered to fulfill his duty to the state and be the first to sacrifice an animal on the altar of an idol. He refused, and when another Jewish man stepped forward to do it, he murdered the officer, tore down the idol and cried, "Let everyone who is zealous for the law and stands by the covenant follow me." That's from 1 Maccabees 2:27. He and his 5 sons, John, Simon, Judah, Eliezer and Jonathan, rallied the Jewish population. this works. Just have a look at that for a little while, because it took us forever to make it work.
Wonderful, that'll be appreciated.
It's so exciting. Isn't that exciting? Okay. In 167 BC, the family of Mattathias became known as the Maccabees, or the Hammer. They tore down the altars of idols and killed those who worshipped them, even many Hellenistic Jews. Mattathias died in 166 BC. He left Judah in charge of his army. Now, Antiochus underestimated the severity of the rebellion and sent his less effective generals to battle the Jewish army, and Judah easily defeated them. He defeated them because he practiced guerrilla warfare. He knew the Judean hills, he knew the terrain, and they would come out of the hills, hammer them, and then disappear back into the hills again. So, Antiochus then was made to look rather foolish, and he was very angry about that, and he was determined to have revenge. So he actually set out to exterminate the Jewish population in Judea with Lysias and around 60,000 Seleucid soldiers. Now, Lysias was his top general. The Jewish rebels were outmanned by 5 to 1. According to the story, Judah prayed to God for victory. The Jewish people secured an almost impossible victory over the Seleucid Empire and over Antiochus. Now, I was having a chat to Keith about this, and we were talking about the fact that he prayed to God when he was, when his armies were outnumbered by, actually I thought it was 7-1. That might be a, anyway, they were pretty much outnumbered. And we were saying that, it's very interesting, isn't it, how people, when they get to the 11th hour and there's just nothing else to do, they pray to God. And we were saying that this is the lesson for us in this story. And I found a comment that I thought was very pertinent during the week. And this is the quote. It seems to be typical of human nature. The reason why many fall in battle is because they wait until the hour of battle. The reason why others succeed is because they have gained their victory on their knees long before the battle came. And of course, we're just not talking about military battles here, are we? So, I don't know about you, but I can't get very excited about battles. But there's the battle. And there's a few pictures of battle. Of course, they were battling right up to the gates of the temple.
And can we look at that again?
Sure.
Yes.
Too fast for you, was I?
Just interesting because there's the ark and there's the
makes it look as if
you're not sure whether they're using the candlestick as a weapon or
objective. Yes, they're holding it up high. I guess that might be to, you know, make them enthuse them. That's the other, and one battle looks like another. Yes. They're just horrible.
I wouldn't like to be up against an elephant.
No, poor elephant, that's right. Why bring the poor animals into it, like the horses in the wars? Oh. Okay, I've gone too far. Okay, so after the defeat, Antiochus' armies were devastated. They met again when Judah's army was at the gates of Jerusalem, but it was a much shorter battle. Judah drove the enemy out of the holy city. When Judah and his brothers went to the temple, he saw the destruction and defilement that Antiochus caused upon it and was overwhelmed by grief. 1 Maccabees 4:36-40. On December the 25th, 165 BC, after months of work, clearing and cleaning, the temple was finally rededicated to God. Their celebrations continued for 8 days, as is known to this day as the celebration of Hanukkah. Now, I'm not going to say much about Hanukkah because Shirley and Margaret have prepared a segment on that. The other name that it has is the Festival of Lights. And also, the people that were celebrating, when they arrived at the temple, there was only enough oil for one day. But the oil actually lasted for the whole of the 8 days. And they believed this to be a miracle. So, I won't say any more about. So that's a map of Israel under the Maccabees. If you like to.
So how long were they in power?
Well, I've got
just a few years.
I've got a another
no,
comment
got an
after that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what did I tell you at the beginning? What was that date? 168, wasn't it?
167, I think. Said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also found this family tree thing. And I'm noticing down the bottom of that, Herod, which is a very familiar name to us, he ruled 37 to 4, just before the birth of Christ. Mm-hmm. So, what Herod would that be?
He would be the Herod.
Herod the Great.
Yeah.
One that killed the babies.
Yeah.
He was the one that killed the babies. Was there another Herod after that?
Yes, there was.
There's lots of Herod.
Yeah, there's lots of Herods, aren't there? That's quite...
This was a family name.
It was a family.
Yeah. It's interesting though, isn't it? How it comes down to him.
This is all that King of North and South in Daniel 11 business.
Right. Well, there they all are. So, he's the aftermath. So we've got some dates here, Rosemary. The Maccabees had accomplished religious liberty and were going after political independence. Although the Jewish people had supported their fight, they were unsure of the political and cultural influence of the Maccabees. The Hellenistic way of life was already entrenched onto the Jewish people. However, after the Maccabees conquered the whole of Judah and enforced the collapse of the Seleucid kingdom in Palestine, the Jewish people imposed themselves as an autonomous group. Judea was now free from the Seleucid rule, and the death of Antiochus in 129 BC confirmed this. The Jewish people were now content with the new political purpose of the Maccabees. Although no brother of Judah survived, with Simon being the last leader of the Maccabees, who died in 134 BC, their intention still flourished. So, they were still around in 134 BC. So, there's just one other little thing one other little aside that I wanted to tell you. Because while I was reading about all this, I came across something quite interesting. It was interesting to me. Because I'm always telling my conversational English people where expressions came from. And this is about the expression to draw a line in the sand. So in 168 BC, Antiochus led a second attack on Egypt and also sent a fleet to capture Cyprus. Before reaching Alexandria, his path was blocked by a single old Roman ambassador named Gaius Popilius Lanus, who delivered a message from the Roman Senate directing him to withdraw his armies from Egypt and Cyprus, or consider himself in a state of war with the Roman Republic. Antiochus said he would discuss it with his council, whereupon the Roman envoy drew a line in the sand around him and said, "Before you cross this circle, I want you to give me a reply for the Roman Senate." This implied Rome would declare war if the king stepped out of the circle without committing to leave Egypt immediately. So, this is the origin, I believe, as the internet was telling me, of this expression, to draw a line in the sand, or a line has been crossed, or... you don't cross this line. Mm. And you know why I thought of that? Because I heard it only a couple of weeks ago in relation to Eddie McGuire.
Oh,
no. They said he's crossed the line. So I thought that was quite interesting. Mm.